Konnichiwa, Nihon Cricket Pod to yokoso. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Japan Cricket Podcast. We're getting into the business end of the season and soon Japan will play our first international matches since the Under-19 World Cup in South Africa 2020. How long ago does that seem? Today's guest hopes to play a major role for the Japan men's team on their first steps towards the 2024 T20 World Cup, which is being held in the USA and the Caribbean, which would make for a fun tour, but we'll get to that. There's been so much domestic cricket since I last did a proper update that it's a bit hard to recap on everything. So I'm going to whiz through this with a little less detail than normal and apologies to anyone that did anything good, which I miss out. Firstly, the T20 finals is coming up on Saturday, the 1st of October. So please tune in to YouTube, providing we don't get hit by a third typhoon in as many weekends, as the four remaining teams, the Chiba Sharks, Tokyo Falcons, Paddy Farrellys, and the Rising Stars, aim to win the inaugural JCL T20 trophy. In Japan Cup is at different stages around the regions. In West Kanto, Wyverns have claimed the regional title and will be competing at the Japan Cup finals in late October. The team they defeated, Serendip, will enter into a playoff to see if they also can make the finals. The Tigers have claimed the South Kanto title after swatting aside the Alpha Quashers, who go into that same playoff. The Tigers have had a pretty miserable luck at the Japan Cup finals, mainly due to the weather, so they'll be staring out the window for much of the next month. In North Kanto, the final is set to be Ceylon versus Pakistan Stars, with the winner making finals directly, and you've probably worked out where the runner-up goes to. While in East Kanto, the weather is playing havoc. Scuba have booked their place in the final, while the second semi-final between the Tuskers and the Tokyo Rangers was washed out, with Tuskers taking their place in the final thanks to finishing higher in the league. They're supposed to be playing that final as I record, but the weather isn't looking so great right now. The Kyoto Super Lions are the Kansai champions, defeating the Osaka Lions in emphatic fashion, and down there both teams do qualify for finals automatically. Lastly, in Tokai, the Kawasaki Knight Riders have swept all before them in the league, but still need to win the final, due to be played tomorrow as I record, against the Nagoya Bengal Tigers, with only the winner making finals from that region. Go and check out the Japan Cricket app and see what happened there. In the Japan Cricket League, there has been a load of matches played in Divisions 2 and 3, and a quick look at Division 3 reveals that the Tigers' third 11 are runaway leaders in that league, and just 5 points separating 2nd and 7th. So only the Falcons' third 11 and Adore are out of the running for playoffs in that league, whilst KO United are looking good for a top 4 finish. The Tigers' second 11 will finish the league campaign on top of Division 2 as well, while the second 11s of Alpha Quashers, Falcons, Men in Blue and Tokyo Rangers, plus the first 11s of Kawasaki Knight Riders and Tokyo Titans, are all fighting out for the last 3 spots. Chiba Sharks, Wyverns and the Rising Stars are bringing up the rear and worrying about potential relegation. In Division 1, as I record, nobody is actually guaranteed a place, even in the playoffs, although that probably would have changed by the time you hear this. Tokyo Rangers and the Tigers both look well set to do so, as does Sano CC, although their final round match with Men in Blue may well prove decisive. The Falcons are well in the mix to squeeze in there as well, while Wyverns look like they will narrowly miss out yet again. Even Paddy Farrellys will be harbouring some hope of making it, although it does look tough for them from here, while the Chiba Sharks, Tokyo Wombats and Max CC are all out of the running, and the Rising Stars remain winless at the bottom of the table and need a bit of luck to avoid the dreaded last place finish. In the Under-19 League, the Sano Braves have been dominant with 6 wins out of 7 matches played, while Uenomiya and Alpha Quashers look good for a top 4 finish, with Tokyo Falcons and Akashima Aviators still hoping to sneak in there as well. In the Under-15s, it's been Lions Club who are unbeaten this year, while Sano Braves, Alpha Quashers and Men in Blue all look set to make finals for Division 1, while Akashima Aviators have been much improved in Division 2 and currently sit top of the table on net run rate over the Serendip Under-15 side. Finally, the University Finals took place on the 18th of September in torrential rain at Akashima from what I could see. Doshisha University retained their title in the men's with a win over reinvigorated Chuo University, while Uenomiya High School defeated Showa University in the women's competition, meaning it was a Kansai double for the second year in a row. In the Tozai Zen, the annual match between the best from Kanto and the best from Kansai at university level, it was Kansai in the men and Kanto in the women this year, so something for Kanto teams to hold on to there at least. Okay, that's enough domestic cricket for now. It's time to hear from another new staff member here at the Japan Cricket Association, and the chap whose name has often come up in the domestic cricket roundup section of this podcast, Reo Sakurano Thomas. Here he is.
Joining me on the podcast today is a new JCA staff member, and Sano Cricket Club all-rounder, Mr. Rael Sakurana-Thomas. Rael, welcome to the Japan Cricket Forecast.
Thank you, Alan.
Great to be on here. Regular listener?
Very. I think I've listened to most of the episodes.
That's the spirit. Good on you. Added plug.
Okay, I like to start this podcast at the beginning, very linear.
Do we again?
I'm very linear here. So we'll start with your early life, shall we? Why don't you tell us where you were born and your parents' background?
Yeah, cool. So I was born in Toyama, the Toyama Prefecture, more specifically the Takaoka city. To be honest, not much there. A bit like Sana.
A bit like kids.
I think Takaoka is known to have like the third biggest Buddha statue in Japan.
Hey, that's the plan.
Toyama is like known for good sushi, very good sushi there. And I think the current NBA star, Rui Hachimura.
Hachimura is
from Toyama.
So,
yeah.
Must be a height thing then. All known. What are your earliest memories of being there?
Not much, to be honest. I remember kindergarten vividly, like me being the only half. Like I look back at the photos, everyone's got black hair, and I'm the only one with like brown hair. Yeah, it's just spotting me would have been very easy in kindergarten. And yeah, I just remember. So my grandparents still live in a house that I grew up in and stuff. So, when I go back there, everything's so like small till it seems like. And I even visited my kindergarten a few years ago. Still looks the same and everything. But yeah,
so I just teachers.
Well, I didn't go inside, but probably. Yeah, I just like being outside from very early age. I don't know. I guess that's my dad's influence. So yeah, dad. Parents' background. Dad taught English in the Toyama University there for 8 years.
Okay, it's passed in.
Yes, and I think mum was studying Japanese history at the time. I still don't really know how they met it. I don't really want to.
I'm afraid my
yeah. But yeah, that's kind of my early childhood memories of
Japan. Yeah, it is. So,
one very vivid early memory was I was 4 years old skiing somewhere close by, I think, and I broke my leg skiing when I was four. And I think often people's earliest memories are like traumatic ones. Yeah. So that's a very vivid memory. Like I can still hear the sound of the leg breaking every day. I've snowboarded ever since. I've never gone back to the
place. That sounds pretty sensible to me.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you left Japan?
Yeah. So I was five. So kind of first year going into school for New Zealand. When you're five, it's your first year of primary school. I've been to New Zealand once when I was maybe two or three to like go for a quick holiday. But at the time, I probably didn't know what that heck New Zealand was. Like, yeah, we're just moving cities, but yeah, we're moving 10, 11 hours flight away from the other side of, yes, down in New Zealand. So 5 years old.
Pretty yeah, okay. Yeah. Can you remember much about like the arrival and the readjustment?
I mean, yeah, there was a big readjustment because I remember first, I don't know for how long, but I don't know any English at all.
So this is a subject very close to my heart, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, with Lion, your daughter as well.
So your dad speaks Japanese then?
Dad's probably around my level. Well, like, I've been here for 3 months. It's probably better now.
And I guess when he was living there for those 8 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, his speaking's always been pretty good. And my understanding's always been pretty good. So we've quite good teamwork.
So in Nathanos, when you were young,
yeah,
as a, you know, pre 5 years old, was it predominantly a Japanese thing?
Yeah, because I lived with my grandparents, it was all Japanese. That's why, like, Dad probably would have taught me the other thing when I was growing up, but it was predominantly Japanese. Yeah. So I think, I don't know for how long, but my parents sat with me like throughout the whole maybe first term of primary school, because I don't know any, like, when you grow up in New Zealand, when you're 5 years old, everyone knows how to speak English fine. And I was just starting from square zero, like, not knowing anything. So that transition was hard, but yeah.
Yeah, Kendall's had to have a similar story. And so since then, you know, been living in New Zealand. So whereabouts in New Zealand were you?
Oh, yes. So I grew up in a town called Cambridge. Cambridge, it's part of the Waikato prefecture, so like right in the middle of the North Island. It's about a 10-15 minute drive from one of the main cities, Hamilton.
Yes.
It's very, like, known as a very safe kind of, you know, traditional uppity class.
This is how your dad sold it to your mum to get her to move over there.
Yeah, well, my grandparents grew up in a town very nearby, but my dad grew up in Cambridge, so he went to the same high school as me.
Yeah,
wow. And yeah, it's a very nice town. It's known as the town of trees and champions.
Because that's
the well, because it was firstly just known as the town of trees, because obviously there's lots of trees in that town. And then we have like a high performance cycling center in Cambridge, and rowing,
Lucas,
and horse riding is very big around that. And like a lot of our gold medals we get at the Olympics come from rowing, cycling, horse riding. So it's where the champions into it, I guess. But yeah, it was a very nice town to grow up in.
Yeah, good
for sure.
So you mentioned those early adjustments and, yeah, obviously the language barrier being the first part of it, but you know, what was it like? You mentioned before that you didn't really have many Japanese mates.
Absolutely. Like, the Japanese community was never really a thing where I was growing up in Hamilton, Cambridge, slash, like, most Japanese sushi places and restaurants were owned in like Korea and China. So, but I guess there is a lot of Japanese people living in New Zealand. It's just, if you're Japanese and you want to move to New Zealand, I think Hamilton / Cambridge would be one of the last places you pick, because every city in New Zealand is like coastal and on a beach. And I'm not saying Hamilton's bad. I'm just saying there's a lot of better places to live. But I
if you're moving from Japan. So, yeah. So as a result, I guess you came back to camp pretty regularly, right?
Yeah.
You're still pretty, sort of entwined with your Japanese roots, kind of aware of your background and your...
Actually, yeah. I actually didn't come back to Japan that often. Since maybe I made the move to New Zealand, it was only maybe 3-4 times.
Okay.
It was from 2010 was to 2019. I didn't go for like 9 years. So that was a big gap. But yeah, obviously, sports always been a massive big part of my life. So I always keep up with, like, Japan's always been my first team. Like, if New Zealand are ever playing Japan, I'll probably support Japan in like rugby or football. But yeah, it's always been my second home for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned your sport then. So as a Kiwi, I'm sure you grew up playing multiple sports, but what are your earliest memories of cricket?
Earliest memories of cricket, they still have it these days, but it's something called like Milo cricket. It's very Kiwi Australian thing.
Yeah.
So Friday nights, come together at a big park. Every primary school kids that want to come, parents are welcome to involve, and we just, you know, throwing, hitting, off a tees, yeah, trying to bowl, that kind of thing. So I think, yeah, it was pretty fairly straight into it. Like when I was 5 years old, obviously not really speaking any English.
Yeah.
I think my parents just thought, yeah, the best way these guys can make any friends is just through sport. So they just made me play many sports and joining clubs and that kind of thing. So yeah, Milo cricket. And then I think I started playing, you do that for a few years and then do like, obviously like softball, and then started getting to hardball maybe like 9 years old, 8 years old. So pretty early.
Yeah. You probably won't remember this, but question for your folks, but like, were you, I mean, you're quite a big lad.
Yeah.
Were you big as a kid? Like, I'm guessing like in Japan, you might've been quite big for your age group, but you might have gone to New Zealand and just been like ready.
Yeah. That's actually quite funny because I was always one of the smallest people in the team.
Yeah.
I was tiny. My mom was maybe 5'3", and up until I was 15, I was shorter than her.
Yeah.
So it was really like fifth, sixth form where I really grew, which I didn't think was going to happen anyway, because dad's 5'9", 5'10".
Right.
So I'm very shocked that I've become 6'2" now. So I was always a small, skinny person. That's how my grandparents, my parents would always pick me up,
mm-hmm. right on the field. So you mentioned schooling in New Zealand and the high school as a dad, you know.
Yeah.
What's it like going to high school in New Zealand? It's so different.
Absolutely. Like, it's very, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why we moved here just before I started school, was because they just thought it would be like quite a chill, like New Zealand's known as very chill place. So, I loved high school. Like, you know, it's very different because in a lot of countries, like if you don't pass high school, if you don't go to college, you're known as like a failure.
Yeah.
But in New Zealand, that's like it's fine. Like you get so many people dropping out at high school
because find a vocation.
Yeah. Like, the trades like building and stuff was very big in New Zealand. So a lot of people, especially guys, and find out drop out when they're like 16 and do like an apprenticeship, and builders make very good money in New Zealand. So yeah, there's no like real pressure to succeed really.
Like a complete
where
no one else done school, with everybody goes to university.
But yeah, for sure. Like every Kiwi growing up, I guess, guy, you play rugby as a kid and your dreams to be an All Black one day and stuff like that. So yeah, it's very set. Like in winter is like football, rugby season, and in the summer and you're playing cricket or, you know, it's about leather tennis, any kind of some sport. So, and yeah, in New Zealand, a lot of school, a lot of, sports growing up is encouraged. So I like that because I enjoyed heaps.
Heaps. So what other sports teams do you follow?
Sports? So really growing up, I would just, you know, rugby. So the All Blacks, the local team was the Chiefs and Waikato. I got into any sport really. If it was on TV, I was watching it. So football, like I loved playing. I didn't play football because I was playing rugby, but I love watching the football, soccer. It's getting so much bigger in England too these days, which is good.
They just missed out in one cup. Sorry.
Any sport I can get into, that's just how I am. Like it's
That's not a bad way to be. I mean, and as a development officer in Sano, that's a pretty useful trait to have. Be doing what you love. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your job at the JCA, what brought you here, and we got to start with your actual role and what it is you're doing as a JCA staff member.
All right. So yeah, being the Sano development officer, I have a few roles. So basically I'm kind of like the foundation or the first pillar of Japan cricket really, because I'm involved with going to schools and then introducing cricket for the first time. We're just playing it with them, encouraging them to like join junior clubs or come to these events that we have here at the Sano International Cricket Ground. I coach like the junior club under 12 teams here, which is, it's exciting. to be a part of the future for Japan cricket. And what else? If there's any events such as social league events or anything going on at the Sana International Ground, then yeah, I'm involved in helping run that or helping out in that.
Yeah, it's kind of growing cricket in some.
Yeah, pretty much. I
understand that as the kids, but it's also...
Yeah, having the headquarters of cricket here, obviously, yeah, it's focusing around here because we have all the facilities here. And basically, yeah, if there's anything else I can help out with, like academy stuff or anything else that people need help with.
Just throw something.
Yeah. And you coached a lot of under-12s before? I have done like similar stuff before in New Zealand. Like we kind of still have a Milan cricket thing going on where kids come and play for the first time and yeah, you're just teaching them basics, throwing, hitting and bowling. So yeah, I know kind of the gist of what it is. So that's helped obviously when it's come over here. Yeah,
cool. And I mean, how have you found it? Like working with those kids and I guess meeting some of the parents as well.
Obviously. Yeah, I think coming over here in April, I was kind of thrown into the deep end with some of these events going on. Coaching straight away. So
obviously it's not the season.
Right. No warm up.
Like, right.
Yeah. Getting thrown into the deep end early on is always not a bad thing, you know. You're learning a lot and it's a lot to take in, but the more you do it, you get used to it more. And yeah, I've come to really enjoy the stuff that we're doing here. But yeah, obviously there's a bit of a language barrier, but with under 12 kids, it's more instead of just talking, just do it. They learn through doing.
So yeah, no,
that's the most important.
So they'll just sit and listen to each other.
Absolutely.
So what's the biggest differences you've noticed between, you know, the coaching of the kids here and what you might have done?
It's actually pretty similar, to be honest. Like, it's more about some of the coaching styles are a bit different because New Zealand people are very outgoing and stuff. And Japanese kids, some of them are very reserved, so you just have to really motivate them and just get them excited, because otherwise they're just very quiet and, you know, you want to get them to enjoy it, have fun.
Yeah, definitely. Any significant challenges in your language for anything
else?
Or any particular successes that you've gone home after a session?
Yeah,
challenges and win.
I mean, challenges is like, I've never been like a really angry person. And sometimes I'm not good at telling people off. I feel like I'm a very nice kind of just shy guy myself. So I need to learn how to, like, you know, if people are like crossing the line, I really need to learn how to tell it. Which isn't always a bad thing, because I'm always coaching with someone else, like either if it's Tani or Sato. So I kind of play the good cop and then play the bad cop.
I know what you mean, though. I mean, I've never been that guy. And I despise having to act like a teacher, basically, and be, you know, a disciplinarian. Don't do this and that. You know, that's not in my character at all, but it's something I've had to. Develop, I guess. I've been in sort of assistant manager roles throughout my career. Very rarely am I sort of the main guy. I'm always the next guy down.
Yep.
Which suits me quite nicely because I can kind of move the main big decision making to someone else and I can influence that if I need to. But when it comes to actually setting the rules, there's a little bit more flexibility when you're the next one down. But you do have to learn how to, you know, draw a line. And I'll tell you what, mate, you really need to learn when you start having kids of your own, because otherwise they will run riot.
For sure.
And so any big successes, any particular moments to stand out?
I mean,
this is great.
I think, just coming from a background of always playing cricket, you learn things that maybe some of the coaches here from just growing up in Japan, haven't learned. So I bring a new angle to my coaching, a lot of trying new stuff with them, which I think has helped because it gets kids excited about like, yeah. And then you've like people, when I go to school visits and stuff, and Bebe is always introducing me as like a national player, and with it, like gets the kids like crazy excited. Like this past week, I had to give out like 50 autographs because Bebe was like, yeah, this guy's in the national team.
He doesn't make
like the Japan, like, yeah, times. I've never, first time I ever stumped like a celebrity, so it's pretty cool. Funny. yeah, I think that's the stuff is definitely a difference, isn't it? And suddenly you're selling these little girls to schools. So I mean, are you optimistic about the future of the game? I mean, you mentioned just then that you're bringing a different angle and you're getting these kids. These are now the kids who are learning it from a young age in the same way that you did.
Yeah.
The guys we're playing with haven't had that or most of them. Absolutely. Like just we've looked recently all our staff members look back on what we've done the last 5 years and look into the next 5 years coming. And the participation numbers are really up, and that's really good to see. And it's just hopefully with like a set staff, and now we can just keep doubling the participation from the bottom level. And then hopefully with what COVID now kind of out of the way, we can start, you know, getting our national team building up and
playing some games.
Yeah, absolutely. So no, I'm really optimistic, and hopefully I can be a part of that, the growth next 5 years or so.
Yeah, sure. Now, how have you found, like, you said there was a readjustment when you went back to New Zealand or to New Zealand for the first
year?
Returning here to live?
Yeah.
How's that been? You know, away from your work, you know, have you kept busy? You kept busy mostly at the cricket field, but when you're not working or playing?
I mean, yeah, I thought it was going to be harder than it was moving here, obviously, with the language barrier. And I've never lived here as an adult and never lived on my own before. So there's a lot of big changes. First ever like full-time job as well. So big changes. It helped that my grandparents met me on the first week and gave me a brand new car to drive. New car, helped me move into a new apartment, which was, I was very grateful for. Growing up here is quite different culture completely. But I've always been fascinated by the Japanese culture. So the food, like, I think I fit into the Japanese lifestyle quite well. Yeah. So
do you feel like you're kind of reconnecting with that
Japanese
yourself?
And absolutely.
Kind of understanding maybe.
Yeah.
Approach certain things.
The only weird thing is like, no one here thinks I'm Japanese. Like, I would be treated like a normal outsider, to be honest, by most people. I think it's probably got to do with, like, my height and hair color. But, yeah, it's just like, hey, I'm Japanese, too, you know? Like, we did that presentation a few weeks ago, and the first question is, where are Alan and I from? And more people are putting their hand up for you being Japanese than me.
Yeah, mate. Yeah. It's obviously, yeah, it's taller than echo.
But yeah, it's not a bad thing. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just, it's funny when I start talking Japanese and they see my name and I'm like, I'm Japanese too. And people are quite shocked.
Yeah, and it just like doesn't get it. It's not real.
Like, one of those teachers said, I look like, who was it? Justin Bieber. Like, I'll take it, but. Cool.
All pictures of in
all
right. So talk to us a little bit about how you actually found out about Japan cricket and how
this
became something that you thought was you wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, I always knew like Japan had cricket, but growing up in New Zealand, I never really thought about it.
Yes.
And then I think I always wondered growing up in New Zealand, like, oh, I wonder if I could ever play for them one day and stuff. And if I ever moved back to Japan, what would it be like? And I think in 2017 or so, Mum came to Sarno and met with Alex and they talked a bit about like if I moved over here, what would I do, and like could I play for Japan and that sort of thing. So ever since then, it was always in the back of my mind, like having the option to move here and try cricket also. And then obviously in 2019, it was all over the news, like how he guys made the under 19 World Cup, and it's like, oh, there's actually really good potential young cricketers there. And it's not just like, you know, people take that seriously and stuff, and like,
and it's not the real cup.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's, and a lot of people assume that, I think.
And then like, I knew quite a lot of the players that went from New Zealand, and when they came back, a couple of the guys told me about some of the players, because you guys stayed at the same hotel.
Yeah, but then there was a barbecue with the New Zealand.
Yeah.
So I was the game got washed out, unfortunately. They were, I don't know, 152 or something after the 21 overs.
No, they were going the right.
But yeah, we ended up, they were the only team we did something like that with, actually.
They were,
I mentioned it on the first day, it was the first game we played. And I asked every other team we played for the rest of the tournament, and no one did it. But the Kiwis were well up for it.
Yeah,
took a rumble all around and
to
mix, exchange some ideas. I mean, the language was obviously a bit of a struggle, but
But yeah, the way I got this job was kind of really funny anyway, because it was quite a good timing, because I finished all my studies recently, like my degree, and
which was then
I did in human performance science, which sounds really fancy, but it's just the fancy word for sports science, really. And I also did sport development and coaching, so which is kind of the role that I'm in now. So it worked out pretty well. And I also did a course on sport journalism. So yeah, I love talking about sport, watching sport. So just thought I'd do that as an extra. But yeah, it was how I got this job was my dad's close friend, James. I don't know how you guys got to talk.
But he contacted me on Twitter, which is random as hell. And I was like, this guy's got a lot of followers. He's an actual real person.
Yeah.
He is. Swear there and on my walk up to the office, he got on the phone and spent, you know, 45 minutes telling me all about this kid.
I think he texted me the late night.
And we were advertising for the job at the time. It couldn't have been better timing. We put the advert out, I think, that week.
Yeah, so it was around December. So I think he just messaged me that night. Would you still be keen on playing cricket for Japan? That's just what the message was. So nothing about a job. And I was like, okay, it's a bit strange, but I'm like, yeah, for sure. And then he gave me your contact and the CV, but then we had an interview. So I think I got the job around December, but I didn't end up coming around.
The rubber is dry season, getting COVID before you. So was it something that had been on your mind kind of towards the end of your studies?
Yeah, absolutely. Like
I remember finishing uni and not knowing what I'm doing next.
Yeah.
I ended up in that phase, right?
Yeah. Didn't really have any plan. Like I was obviously going to look for jobs and stuff. And for cricket, I was just, you know, I didn't have some massive goals of making New Zealand the team. Obviously, that'd be the dream, but like what I just basically, my goal was just to improve each day. That's kind of my goal, and see where, how far I can get really, but still very much enjoying my cricket. And yeah, something like coaching and developing young players is something that I've always wanted to do. So
yeah, cool. So then you're somewhere as you said.
Yes.
Late April, first time you actually arrived?
The 11th, I think.
Yeah, the 11th. Yeah. So, and as you mentioned earlier, thrown straight into it.
Yeah.
I guess you said you knew a bit about Japan cricket and you had some ideas. So coming in and playing in that Future League and then the JPL straight away.
Yeah.
Now that you've been here a few months, was that, do you think that was quite a good way to give yourself a pretty good overview of the standards, both at the junior level and then
I got here on the Monday, and then Yopshi, the ground manager, was just like, yeah, we have training tomorrow, so come as soon as you want. And I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty early. And I had no idea what to expect from Sana. Like, you were telling me they won one game last year. I'm like, oh, okay, we got a lot to work with in it. But then I ended up going and I think most of the team was there. And I was like, yeah, I'll just take it easy bowling today and batting. But I was bowling to, I think the first pair I was bowling to was Taniyama and Kazumasa. And they were just pinging off drives, cover drives. And I was like, okay, these guys can really play. And I was like, at the end of the training, I was bowling full out and they were handling it. Okay. And I was like, how these guys only won one game last year? The two that I talked about didn't play last year. But I'm like, yeah, this is well, surprising. Like the expectations I thought of this team. And then, yeah, I think there was like a couple of weeks later, the Futures League, so the under 23 comp, and I'd get thrown in captaining, which was the known. Like, I haven't captained for a while, maybe since high school, but I've always been around good captains and just growing up in the game, you kind of just know. So it was, I love taking on a leadership role, I think. And it was quite hard because half the players are Japanese and half, like, it was quite a random mix of players in the Futures League. So just trying to communicate in Japanese to some, it was quite hard. But it was really good to see the future of Japan cricket that weekend and got to see a lot of upside to a lot of those players. So. And very young too. I think the youngest player was like 14. Played the next 8 years or something.
Yeah.
9 years.
There's going to be some big records in that Futures League. I mean,
most leading run scorers.
Yeah.
The youngest was about 13. I think 13 was actually the youngest.
Yes.
But yeah, you have Nikhil Pol, who's battling 14 years old. Then JPL came next.
Yeah.
JPL rained tested. So.
Yeah, it was a shame about the weather, but the JPL was obviously the level of cricket that we'd have in Japan club
T20
stuff. And no, it was really good. Like obviously the rain affected it, but it was good to meet most of the people. Like, cause yeah, in New Zealand, it's very, you know, you just play in your provinces, but in Japan, people are coming from
just comes
and like, it's not easy. So it was really good to have everyone together for that whole weekend and meeting everyone. And
then you had 3 day training camp afterwards. And that was, you know, glorious sunshine for those.
Yeah. No, it was great.
How did you find being in that national squad? I mean, you were in it originally named in the under 23 squad.
Yeah.
It's been promoted into the men's squad. And we'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. But, you know, those 3 days, how would that compare as a sort of environment and a standard wise to what you were doing back home?
Yeah. Like obviously the national team, every one of those players could play top division in New Zealand easily. And some of them would be pushing obviously professional like district teams, I would say. And yeah, it was quite a good mix. Everyone kind of knew each other, but there was also a lot of new players. So, and you obviously haven't had a new international game in over 3 years, so I guess it's been hard to have the team camaraderie just because you haven't played a lot of games together. But having regular meetups, camps, so everyone gets, you know, knowing each other off the field is certainly gonna help.
I've got one this weekend.
Hopefully the weather. But I think even if you're not training, just being around each other, just talking about cricket, talking about anything, just can only help.
Yeah.
Your on-field performance.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite moments from your time was, I reckon it must have been sometime that week, maybe the night before the Futures League started, and we'd been and met all the other boys who'd flown in.
Yeah.
And I just remember walking you back to your hotel because you didn't know your apartment at that point. And you was like, I'd never met another half Japanese person before I came to Japan. It was about 5 in a day.
Yeah, like I said, the Japan community is not very big in New Zealand. So meeting all those kids who were around similar ages, man. It was like meaty, long lost brothers, to be honest.
Yeah.
You guys,
it was quite funny now. All of our mums were the Japanese ones as well.
But yeah, they were a great bunch of guys. And I think all of them, you know, are in the same kind of upbringing as me, living in other countries, being half Japanese and growing up playing cricket and having the aspirations of playing for Japan one day.
And they're pretty passionate about their Japanese heritage.
Yeah, yeah.
They learn about the country and experience more of it, I guess.
Yeah.
COVID hasn't allowed that for the last 3 years.
I think, yeah, it's got a lot to do with that undermining the World Cup, right? You had a lot of people after that outreach
and you guys
saying like, hey, I'm not just it is.
And we continue to do so.
Yeah.
Another one just the other day.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great to see. So just lastly on that, you mentioned size, I see a bit and the improvement and how they finished down the bottom of the table last year.
Yeah. You're
currently sitting fourth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The goals for the club, what do you think you can, I mean, it's a young team, right? It's
very young and half the team at least in some sort of national academy group. So it's good to see. And Sano is one of the only teams that have an under-19 team as well and an under-15 and junior. So there's a pathway, you know, to go up to that men's team. And we're one of the only teams, well, we must be the only team that has 24/7 access to the facilities here at SICG and the Nets. So having all that, there's no reason why we can't be, you know, all the other teams in the JCL be like,
envy
like Sana, yeah. You know, so I want to get that team to that point where we're one of the clubs that you look up to as how there's like a pathway. And yeah, for sure, like building a team culture in that way.
Spending a bit more time together off the field.
Yeah, like I put down here, like really lean into the social side of cricket. I mean, that's not just like, what I mean by that is like out on the field, I feel like Japanese people are always so serious as soon as they play cricket. But like after every ball, like you just switch your mind off and you can just talk to your fielders like, what are you doing next week? Like anything. It's just talking and, you know, being vocal, which I know that's not Japanese culture to be very outgoing, but it's just, well, one thing you can do about playing cricket, you know.
And funnily enough, it's something Shizuka Miyaji mentioned in the podcast when she came back from Sabre.
Right.
Was switch on, switch off.
Yeah, yeah.
And the ability to do that in the top players, so that you can't be
switched on
all the time.
Yeah.
So your brain can't handle it.
Especially if you're batting. As soon as one ball's gone, I just go for a wander and just think, you know, switch my mind off. And then when I get back to the crease, it's switch on again. So it's just trying to get them to that. And also, like, after the game, instead of everyone just packing up and leaving, like just stick around and
have a chat.
Like obviously in New Zealand, you have a beer, but you can't really do that when everyone's driving.
Yeah. But you know, it's just talking about the game.
You got the T-Row.
Yeah. You like laugh about anything that happened. You know, it's just cricket's not just about playing and getting it, but it's very like, it's one of the only sports where when you're batting, you can just chat about anything, you know.
Yeah.
In rugby, you're football, you're always.
Yeah.
Out. Yeah.
Something Dylan and I talked a lot about actually separately in that, you know, cricket is, and I mentioned this briefly in our presentation with those kids that you mentioned before, in that cricket is a game that has a lot of time with your mates off the field.
Yeah.
You know, if you're out early or if you're waiting back for a long time, you're just sitting on the sideline. And then when everyone's talking about shorter formats, T10, T5, F5, it becomes, you lose that.
Yeah.
And you're taking something away from the game. So even in T20, you do lose that to a degree. And that's why in 40 over cricket and in the JCL, I think it's important to maintain that side of it.
Mm-hmm.
That is how you grow a camaraderie in the culture and make actual proper friendships.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
obviously a lot of my best friends now are just from what I've met through cricket. And I think I can speak for a lot of people and back in New Zealand, especially, like, without the social side, a lot of people would have just quit cricket. Mm. Like, I would have honestly quit cricket if it, like, because a year you make no runs and you just get smashed. It's just like, what do I come here? Like, bowling 20 overs, just chasing the red ball all day. And it's just like, what's the point? But it's, you know, it's just talking to your mates all the time. That's why I think a lot of people enjoy cricket. And people are like, you're spending all day out in the sun instead of rugby where it finishes in 2 hours. And it's like, you don't get the stuff in cricket that you get in rugby. So yeah, it's just like stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And one other thing I want to add about a golf with Sano CC is, I know it's happened briefly, but I want to try get some of the Sano boys or anyone else in Japan cricket to come play, if they're really into cricket, and see if they want to excel in that, is come play overseas for a season, especially with COVID, you're allowed to travel now. Like, I think especially some of those players that we have in Sano now, just come play for my club back home in New Zealand during the summer or winter here. And I think,
yeah, there's been a bit of that in the past. Some of those guys, Tony has played in Australia, he's played in Melbourne for, and Eric Older has been in New Zealand. There's a few people who do it. It's trying to get them to understand that it's not, the world's not that big and scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Even like if I just go with them back to New Zealand and say just stay for a month or so, it's just like, if you're practicing that at a high level, then, you know.
Yeah. And especially during our winter, because we don't have that much with indoor facility, it's hard to do anything from November through to February. So there is definitely a window there.
And that links into the Japan national squad as well, because, I mean, it's an issue we've had. But then it was an issue building up the Under-19 World Cup, actually. World Cup took place in January. It was like, well, we didn't have anything. We didn't have the indoor net that we've got now. So yeah, you're into the men's squad. You've had some early training camps, which we talked about already. Are you pretty clear on the structure, the pathway that exists for Japan in the region?
To make it to a major tournament?
Yeah.
I know there is a pathway, and for countries like regional countries like Japan, it's very difficult to get to those major tournaments.
But they have streamlined it, so it's a lot easier now.
In terms of the T20 World Cup, that is the ICC's like vehicle for growth for cricket. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's all regional now. We sit in the East Asia Pacific region. There's 8 members who are playing in these tournaments.
Yep.
Split into 2 groups of 4. Although because the Philippines went quite far in the previous qualification cycle, they're actually out of our group. So we're just sitting in a 3-team tournament.
Mm-hmm.
With Indonesia and Korea, and the winner of that goes into a regional final, and they play. Philippines are already there. Papua New Guinea will most likely be there,
and then another winner from the Pacific region.
Mm-hmm.
And then you win that regional final, back into the World Cup.
Right.
So previously it used to be going towards, there'd be another step you could, a global qualifier, but for now they've done away with that because the T20 World Cup is 20 teams. Now, what that format of a 20-team World Cup will look like, I'm not sure. I suspect it will be another pre-kind of dodgy qualifier before the top teams come in, but we'll see on that. But the 50-over stuff is much harder.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't play in the ICC 50-over cricket until we get our T20 ranking high enough to get the opportunities to play. So, yeah, you have to... It's kind of ridiculous. You have your T20 ranking up to a certain point to be allowed to play 50-over cricket again. Now, they're doing away with the Super League, so that may change again. And it has changed several times. But yeah, at the moment, 50-over cricket is not in our future, which means just a focus on T20. Have you seen much or anything of the kind of teams that we'll play against? We Papua New Guinea were on TV last night to watch any of that.
I just keep the scorecards, but I don't scout individual players or anything. But No, not really at all, because I guess Indonesia and Korea, who would be playing in the qualifiers, they're in the same situation as us, like that, played in about 3 years plus.
We have no idea what their team's going to be when it does.
Yeah, I've always just been in the mindset of taking it one game at a time and just focus on your own game first. And then, but it's always helpful to know, like, some of the tendencies of each batsman and stuff. But
strikes first.
Yeah. And in terms of your role in the Japan team, have you had a chat with Coach Bedingfield about what role he sees you playing? And in an ideal world, what would that role be, do you think?
Yeah, he said I'll probably be opening the batting and bowling.
Maybe keep a second half up and bowl your overs.
No, honestly, the first goal of mine is to make the team for October, hopefully. That'll be the goal. And then if I do, that'll be a huge honor to make that team and play for Japan. Yeah, we have had chats about my kind of role. Because I see myself more as like a bowling all-rounder.
Yeah,
recently my batting's been a lot better than my bowling. So I'm not. That's the great thing about fielding all-rounders, because if you just get no runs and you're a batter, it's just then you. But at least if you're an all-rounder, you get to bowl. But yeah, it's kind of my role would probably be like middle to lower order bat, and if you're batting in a T20 at that time, it'd be trying to go for boundaries, trying to get runs off every ball kind of thing. And then bowling, not sure if I'll be opening up or first change kind of role, but yeah, just.
But you enjoy bowling with a new ball?
I do, yeah. I pride myself on not being a wicket taker, but more of like a economy bowler. So
it's what I pride myself
on. Changing it up. I mean, I try to take wickets, but it doesn't always happen.
Yeah, cool.
Well, I mean, it's an exciting time for the men's team. They've said tournaments on the horizon. Hopefully they can actually get out in the park.
Even if it's not. Like, everyone focus on batting or bowling, but I pride myself on my fielding as well. Like, I think it's just as important as batting or bowling. Like, if you take those 5-10% chances, it can turn a match more than a batting or a bowling. And so, yeah, I think fielding is real important as well. And also, like, because if I do make the team, I'll be one of the most experienced players playing for nearly 18 years of cricket in my life. So just trying to help out as much as I can in the leadership role or anything I can do.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that with the academy as well. You're still kind of hanging around with them. They're going to have World Cup qualifier next year.
Yeah.
And, you know, what have you seen in that group in your time there so far and really excited about?
Yeah. I mean, I know a couple of them. I haven't met the four under 19 squad yet. I know a handful of the players quite well, and I think their goal, obviously, because it's 50 over cricket, it's just to play it, because a lot of them only played T20s at all, and not all of them play regularly, so it's just, you know, playing as much as I can, and hopefully I can help out as much as I can so they can qualify yet again. It'd be quite a young group this time around too, again. So, yeah, it's just trying to get them to come together.
Yeah, build it. They don't know each other more than that.
Yeah.
A little bit of work to do then.
Cool. Well, thanks for that. We finish every...
We're still doing it. I was just saying we.
I finish every podcast with some cricket-specific questions and some specific questions. So we'll run through these out to spend too much time on them, just whatever comes to mind. So... Best player you've played with or against?
See, I've played with so many good professional players in New Zealand. It's hard to name. Like, not elite.
Any wicket you're particularly proud of? Knock over anyone with international experience or anything like that?
I mean, if you count net bowling, does that count?
Maybe. If you had the stumps at
that. I've bowled to New Zealand. New Zealand team, I've bowled to South Africa,
Pakistan, India, Nepal.
Oh, really? They've just come as a tour and you've just been in that bowl?
Yeah, yeah. Every time they came to play at Sydney Park, I've been asked to do a bit of net bowling. So the best poll I'd probably taken would have been Faf du Plessis. I took his off pole. He left it, actually. Took his off pole. And after that,
were you going up as well?
Oh, I...
And then that...
This can't be celebrated, but I remember, like, who's the fastball? Rabada. He came and, like, picked me up and kind of rubbed it in his face. And Faf, after that, he gave me, like, a pair of gloves and training shirt off that. So he's a really nice guy. And apart from that, I haven't, you know, it's so hard to get, like, if you're one of the batsmen, you know, like, I'm not getting out of this guy. I've played Kane Williams and Planworth quite a few times, which is quite,
it's a win.
It's a win. I'll tell you that. But yeah, it's always a good experience just to bowl to those guys. For sure.
Yeah, definitely. Best thing you've ever learned from a coach?
I mean, there's stuff that I take into my cricket game, but I don't know if I've learned them off coaches or just heard them. Like this quote that I've written down here, I learned it off a movie. Have you seen American Sniper?
Yes.
Yeah, so they're a quote from that movie is aim small, miss small.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do when I bat and bowl. Instead of looking at the wickets, I look at top of ball. So if you miss small, you aim small, you miss small.
Yeah.
Or batting, I don't look at a gap, I look at, you know. So I know it's off a movie about snipers, but and then another one's just like, keep it simple. I think a lot of players think about way too much and get into their own heads when they're playing cricket. So it's not as simple as just see the ball, hit the ball, but pretty much that's what you got to do with cricket. If you just overthink things and get into your head, you're just going to beat yourself out. So yeah, keep it simple and then aim small, miss small.
Nice. Favorite shot?
Favorite shot. One that I'm particularly not great at, but just a nice straight drive, straight back to the bowler for, I love playing the short ball. So a nice ball shot along the ground, straight drive and ball shot. Yeah.
First thought off being dismissed.
First thought is just like anger.
As a rage.
Just like,
I'm just like a not very angry guy.
I'm not. I don't get angry at other people. I only get angry at myself. Anger and like, bit of like depression, like, what have you done? But then as soon as I walk off the field, I'm fine. Like, in New Zealand, you get hits, especially kids that just throw tantrums, like smack the wickets over, like throw their bat, and like, it's not good, but like,
doesn't it?
It doesn't. And like, the worst thing is you had a lot of parents like abusing their kid after they bat out, and that's just the worst thing.
Right.
Like, don't be that kind of, yeah, it's like, my dad was never like that.
It's not, probably just as well. Career highlight?
Career highlight? Probably knocking Faf du Plessis off a whole lot. Best down figures was 6 for 2. I was on a hat trick of whites. And I think those two runs were wides as well, so they actually didn't score any runs off the bat. But yeah, I haven't taken a 5 for since that 6 for 2 was when I was maybe like 16.
Right.
For my club back home, Cambridge Cricket Club. Just before I came over here, I got my 100th wicket. And I didn't take a 5 for. Like,
yeah, okay.
I think I might have been the first person to get 100 wickets without taking a 5 for. I've never been able to take a 5 for. It's like my curse. I can't take one. I always get 4 or something.
No, we'll keep an eye on that. Is there any loss? Any particular match that stands out? Is it still great?
Still really
getting noisy?
Well, it's not. I wasn't playing, but it's got to be the 2019 World Cup. Right?
Like, there's so many.
That was three years ago yesterday, I think, was the anniversary.
So many things wrong with that. Like, they, after that tournament, they took away the boundaries rules.
Yeah.
And they figured out that Ben Stokes shouldn't have been on strike. And it's just like, well, great. Like, could I use that?
Yeah. Where was that a couple of days ago, guys?
But yeah, that's still.
Yeah.
I stayed up there. And I was just in tears, I think. I think it was about 4 or 5 in the morning.
It was the same. Yeah, I was up until my wife was not amused at the time. And she came out of the bedroom. She's like, can you turn it down, please? I'm like, it's the Super Over. No, I can't. Go out to bed. It was like 3 in the morning there as well.
Yeah. Funniest thing you've seen happen on the cricket field?
Yeah, that's... had a T20 tournament and it was like severely hot for New Zealand. It was only like 32, but a 32 degrees in New Zealand feels like 40 here. So it was really hot and I was just a spectator and our team was batting. And it was only a spin bowler, but our batsman got like absolutely smashed on the box. And he's just throwing up all over the place.
Hot.
And I've never been hit badly on the box before, but it's the first protective equipment that it's put on. And yeah, he's just thrown up all on the pitch and we were just in tears, but like being him would have been the worst. And his dad was actually the manager on the time, so he had to clean it all.
Delayed the game for a while.
Yeah. Like it created a pretty good pitch. Pitch. But yeah. That's still pretty funny too, man.
Jeez. Didn't tell I wasn't in.
Favorite format, both to play and to watch?
Yeah, it's got to be tits, right? To play, I love playing. Like, I'm not a T20 player at all, which isn't good if we've got T20.
Yeah,
not
about T20.
I'm more of like a 58 to 2 day, 3 day, what we play back home. But yeah, watching it, test is the pinnacle. It always has been, right?
Yeah.
People don't really understand how after 5 days, there can still be a draw, but it's still very exciting to me.
Yeah, definitely. Favorite teammate?
Favorite teammate? It's probably got to be Bethan. I'll give two, one dear and one. But probably in Japan. Favorite teammate is probably this guy called Matt Fisher. We grew up playing since we were maybe 7 years old. And we've just grown up. We've opened the bowling together, always bat together. And like he was in the under-19 World Cup in 2017. He went to that World Cup, which was in New Zealand, actually, and went to a few of his games. And yeah, I've always been like one of his biggest supporters. He's got a professional contract with the Northern District side now. Okay. He bowls, I'm pretty sure he's been clocked at 148 before. Yeah. So hopefully he gets a lot of injuries, but hopefully if he comes right and his bowling's at the peak, see him as a black hat one day for sure.
Yeah, good.
And yeah, it's just the guy that I've always just grown up with and stuff.
And so our song is this.
Oh yeah. I mean, we can do a tour of New Zealand and you'll come involved to us for sure. And then for Japan, I think it's gotta be Kazumasa. Like, no, he's 19 and he's already, right, one of the best players in Japan. And the good thing about him is a lot of the players here are like from India or like Sri Lanka or half like me, but he's actually full Japanese.
Come through the program.
And he's as good as batter as he is bowler. And if he just keeps working hard, I'll be his number one supporter. Give him every opportunity he needs and he could easily be Japan's superstar and cover athlete for Japan cricket for the next 10 years, I reckon.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. hope so. A lot of time in that bit. Okay, we've got one innings or bowling for formed by someone else that you wish you could have done yourself.
I've got a few.
They were fighters because you know.
Got a few. I was looking back. I should have said this as one of my earliest memories, but I'm pretty sure one of the first ever games that I went to as a kid was in 2007. I've got the scorecard here. It was in 2007 at Seddon Park, and it was part of the Chapel Hadley series. Yeah. Like, they don't do that anymore, but we used to do like a 3 ODI tournament, and New Zealand beat Australia by one wicket, and Australia scored 346, which is something
sad.
Like, here, yeah, it's a good score these days, but back in 2007, I was like, okay, you've lost. I think, yeah, Matthew Hayden scored 181, didn't get out. Yeah, looking at some of the names, Shane Watson, Brad Haddon, Brad Hodge, this classic.
Classic Aussie.
Yeah, and New Zealand were 30 for 4.
Is this when Chris Cairns?
No, Chris Cairns didn't play. Craig McMillan scored 117, and then Brendan McCullum brought it home, scoring 4 off the last over. Yeah, because they won by one wicket. And that was a white box. So New Zealand won that series 3-0. And that chap went. It was just one of my first ever memories of what, going to a game watching. I was like, from then on, I think, because Brendan McCullum was the really young, very young at the time. And looking here, everyone is retired. No one's still playing. The latest would have been Ross Taylor. But yeah. After that, I think every kid in New Zealand wanted to be Brendan McCullum. Like, everyone wanted to wear number 42, have a Puma bat, and kid, even though I never kid.
Yeah.
That was one of my first very memories. So just being Brendan McCullum from that on. Any innings he's played, really.
Yeah.
Like, or as a bowler, I would have loved to be any West Indian fast bowler during the 80s.
Like, any of them.
Any of them. Malcolm Marshall, Curly Ambrose, Joel Garner, any of them. Like, going, like, just imagine facing them without a helmet on.
Yeah.
Just getting peppered.
Terrifying.
Terrible.
Just standing.
I would have loved to draw the fear in batsman's eyes. If there would have been like me bowling to Coutinho without a helmet.
Well, those school kids said that. They were scared just standing behind the net. Cool. Okay. What's some Japan specific questions?
Yeah.
So now that you're here and you're living again, what's your favorite thing about Japan?
Just how safe it is. Like, especially in Sano, I'd feel confident about opening all my car doors at night and leaving my keys on the roof, and no one would. People would probably close the doors for me. And like, yeah, bring back my keys. Like, people are so friendly in that way, and like, respectful, which is kind of how I see myself as, and everything's so advanced. Like, New Zealand feels like it's 5 years, 10 years behind Japan, yeah. Like, in its advancement, like the technology. Like, every time you go to Tokyo, it's like being on another planet.
Yeah, always been different.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, just obviously the food, it's like. Mum's always made the best Japanese food. So just having that constantly here, it's just amazing.
Favorite food?
Favorite food. Yeah. You can't go wrong with sushi. Always love sushi.
Been getting into a lot of that.
Yeah. I'm good with most fish as well. Ramen and karage. Yeah. Those would be my favorites.
Any dodgy stuff that the boys have forced you to eat? Yeah.
I mean, I'll try eat everything once, but something that I'll never try is, like, I don't think I could eat a horse. Like I said, we come from a town of champions where there's horses everywhere. And I guess, like, in Japan, you just don't see any horses. So you just don't build a connection with them.
Yeah.
But like me, just, I can't, I'm not eating
a horse.
Yeah. It's
complete.
Like, but like, yeah, I'll try anything once. I'm good with most things. Like, yeah.
Is there any one place that you'd recommend a visitor should go to? I mean, is there any more place you want to go to and you haven't had the chance to do much traveling?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, every time I've come here, it's either been to family in Toyama or like the popular spots like Kyoto, Osaka, Tokyo. I do like it's very popular place, but I recommend people going to Osaka because travelers that come to Japan, they think Tokyo, Tokyo, Tokyo. But I reckon Osaka is quite just as cool, and it's got like a different vibe to Tokyo.
Definitely.
So it's quite a cool place. But yeah, there's definitely places that I want to visit too. Like I've never been down to the bottom, like in the Kyushu area. The furthest west I've been is Hiroshima. That's it. And then Hokkaido. I love the snow. I want to go snowboarding up there.
In the winter. Hokkaido's great. Really fun. All right. So we've talked a bit about language.
Yeah.
Last question. What's your favorite Japanese word or phrase and its meaning?
Right. The words and phrases I love the most are ones that like you can just use for anything.
Yeah.
Like, otsukaresama. Like I looked up the meaning for otsukaresama and it's like to be tired, and people use it in the morning, afternoon, like just to say tired. And it's like, how is that saying thing being tired just being used? So I just love saying like,
it's just the, mine's saying because it's the knowledge with the pod word is making you tired. So you've done something.
I mean, saying it like first thing in the morning to me, it's just like, oh, okay. You can use it there as a, so yeah, any word that you can just use, for multiple meanings, or it's kind of some, daijoubu, like, yeah, I'm fine. It's everything's okay. Like those words.
Yeah.
Especially for someone that's still learning Japanese, like words that you can use for multiple
things. In any environment. It's generally fine.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Pretty much it.
Ray, great to chat, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, great. And I'm keep on keeping on. If you need me for any other podcasts in the future,
give your minds.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Japan Cricket Podcast. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we're now heading into final season, as well as a bunch of international stuff. There'll be more on all of that coming in due course. Although I have nothing specific planned, I promise that I will be covering everything in as much detail as time allows. Thanks as always to BRB Monday for the backing sounds for this episode, and to all of you for tuning in. If you've not left a rating or review of the show yet, then you probably never will, but I'm going to ask you again anyway. It really is just a thumb click or two away, and it would really help me out. Until next time, arigato gozaimashita.